Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Tips Appreciated. Today we have Jeremy from the Teeth Podcast. So his podcast is actually about people surviving animal attacks, but he's also going to be talking today with us about him being a kayak guide in the Channel Islands National Park and maybe other interesting stories about him living there. So yeah, stay tuned. Welcome to the show, Jeremy.
Yay.
Thanks for being our guest today.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, tell us a little bit of introduction about yourself to our listeners and viewers.
Oh, I have to do the introduction?
Yeah. Give us a little bit of
intro. Yeah, talk about yourself.
You're the special guest.
You told us cool stuff about yourself.
Yeah.
So. All right. Okay. So I'm a huge fan of NOM trips and tips appreciated.
Thanks.
So I feel like I'm a fan until like be on a show that I'm a fan of right now.
Nice.
So
that's
my story.
Thank you. Come on, you're way cooler. You have way better stories than that.
Well, that's the coolest thing about me is that I listen to the podcast.
No.
Second, I also do, I'm a wilderness kayak guide and animal handler. And I'm putting together a podcast where I interview people that have been attacked by animals and have survived to tell the story. Spoiler alert, they all survive to the end.
You're able to talk to them. Nice.
Yeah. Sometimes when I'm listening back, I'm like, oh man, I hope this guy's going to be okay. And then I remember he makes it.
Nice.
But you get caught up in the story sometimes, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And there's no podcast that exists that interviews people that have survived animal attacks. Like maybe like a podcast will do like a one-off story with somebody, but not a whole podcast like that. Every single episode is another person who survived.
I'm so excited.
Yeah,
for your
we are so pumped.
Yeah,
I've told some of my friends about what's coming in terms of your podcast, and they're like, I cannot wait to hear some of those stories. I think you're going to give us a bit of a sneak peek later, but you talked about animal handler. So you've always loved animals, even as a kid, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So tell us some of the stories around that. I think you told us a squirrel story last time where you're able to
catching
a squirrel.
Yeah. These two squirrels were trying to get it on and they weren't paying attention. So I grabbed one.
Nice.
And it bit me. It almost bit me. It had its mouth open. And it was like, seriously, dude, this is the worst time for you to be like trying to grab me. And then I dropped it like right before it bit me. And I was like, I caught a squirrel. But I don't even know if that counts because I was super distracted.
It still counts.
Like, squirrels, I'm not going to catch a squirrel. Yeah.
So you're a kayak guide then in the Channel Islands National Park?
Yep, exactly.
Tell us about that.
Well, the Channel Islands National Park is the least visited national park in the lower 48, 49, including Hawaii. There's one national park in Alaska. I don't even know what it's called, but like the only way to get there is like a private charter that there's no like you can't just like book a reservation to get out there. So anyways, other than that place, which nobody even knows about, Channel Islands is the least visited because you have to take a boat out there, and it's my favorite of the parks that I've been to. Nobody's allowed to live there because it's wilderness, but we kind of have like a little loophole.
Nice.
So when we're working out there, we can camp out there for, you know, so many days until we run out of food. And then they send us back to get more food.
Wow. What's
your favorite experience there so far?
Oh man, there's been so many. One of the most amazing experiences. my mind has like three right now. I'm gonna pick the second one that I thought of, which is probably the best.
Okay.
This is a complicated answer. Okay. I go out at night in the winter to catch lobster because they're not breeding in the winter and the season's open. So they're spiny lobster, which I think tastes better than the lobster, the East Coast ones with the claws.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I go out at night and sometimes there's this thing called bioluminescence, which are these, you know, little organisms in the water that glow naturally, especially when they're like disturbed, right? So if you like put your hand through the water, you'll leave like a glow streak, like you're in a Disney movie. Like I'm the princess in the Disney movie, and this is like my special moment, and it's amazing.
Nice. Amazing.
And when you're under the water, it gets even trippier, because if a fish swims by you, the fish will leave like a glow streak in the water, right? Wow. So sometimes I'll just turn off my flashlight if I'm not being too much of a chicken, and just like watch different things go by that, like, it's like you're in outer space or something. I can't even describe it. It's so crazy. Mm-hmm. Well, one time I was, I noticed a very large, very large glow shape go by me, like 10 feet away. And of course, like the first thing I think of is like great white shark is glowing its way over here to kill me. But the pattern that it was kind of doing like a loop, like it would swim, then it would do like a roller coaster loop, and then go another way, and then like very abruptly change direction and do another loop. And if you've ever seen a shark swim, that's not how they swim.
Good.
So I was like, if it is a shark, it's super drunk.
It's or, drunk from the glowy stuff.
Yeah. Or it's a sea lion. And that's how sea lions swim. They're like complete spaz balls, you know. And it was a sea lion, thankfully. I think that's the only animal that really swims like that, like on a regular basis.
Yeah.
But yeah, to be able to see that, I mean, sea lions get like the males get, California sea lions can get over 1,000 pounds, like a really big male.
Yeah.
That one was, you know, I don't know what the sex was from the glow streak behind it, but it was, you know, it was bigger than me, you know, it was wider and larger than me going through the water. To like to have that experience, that's like really a really wonderful, like,
yeah,
definitely sticks with me. And then I was telling somebody about it and brought them out like a couple weeks later, and we were kayaking, and you look, and underneath us a sea lion swam through the bioluminescence. They got to see it from the surface underneath us, which is also really magical. Yeah, I was like, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. And then the second time it happened, I was like, this is twice in a lifetime.
Yeah, I'm having like visions in my head about that. That sounds amazing.
But
like a magical Disney movie. That's all I can explain as.
But did you get lobster though? Did you catch your lobster?
Probably. I mean, after that experience, I have a conversation with a friend on the podcast actually about like sometimes when you have like a crazy experience like that, like that sometimes that's the grand finale of the night. Mm. Like you can keep going and doing stuff, but like that's the main thing.
That's it.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I go out there to get lobster. I go out there to get in the ocean, you know, like that's the real reason, is to be out there in the ocean. And all these like hobbies, like guiding and photography. Mm-hmm. It's just another reason that I can like trick myself into getting out into the ocean where I love being, you know. If it's just going into the ocean to get in the ocean, it's like, oh, it's cold, it's windy, I'll come up with excuses. But then if I'm like, there's lobster out there, then I'll get my butt out there.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, you talk about your love for nature too. Like that is your thing, right? Like you just love nature, being outside.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, what's interesting though, sometimes, like, I know that if you ask me the questions, I know the answer is yes. But sometimes, you know, if I'm having like a tough week or something and going through some stuff, like my brain forgets that, you know, and I'll be like, I'm just going to sit inside and feel depressed. And it's sometimes like, I have to remind myself, like, no, you like nature, you need to get your butt outside and just like go for a hike or something, you know. And it's I think a lot of us, you know, we get caught up in life, we forget the things that we really love, like eating food. Usually we remember because we get hungry, but yeah.
Right. So eating food, you also talk a lot about catching, cleaning, preparing food. Talk about like that as well, like, you know, when you're out
there. For sure. So I've been going out to the Channel Islands National Park for a lot of years, since I've been living in California, maybe around 10 years I've been going out there. And you know, going to the beach, going to the ocean, even on the mainland California, and kind of going back to the theme of like finding new hobbies to put me in places that I love, you know, like I would go to the beach and be happy to swim and sit and read a book. And then I was like, oh, I should get in the water. And then I started snorkeling and then, you know, kayaking, and then now catching food too, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just like more reasons to be outside. In the Channel Islands specifically, there is some incredible seafood that you don't even need equipment to gather. other than your hands, or if you have a prosthetic hand, that would probably work too. So yeah, you just go out there. I actually don't have like a fishing pole. I had one in Ohio when I was growing up, but like I haven't owned one in California. So I just go out, and if it's something that I can grab with my hands, game on. I have maybe a bag I put stuff in, and a couple other little like gloves. But for the most part, grabbing things with my hand, it's very primal. It's very challenging.
Yeah.
I bet.
I love it. So the species that I go after the most are probably urchin.
Ooh.
Known as uni.
Yeah.
Delicious. You all have tried uni before?
Yeah, I've had fresh. It's so good.
Okay. Yeah. I've only had it once at a restaurant, and it wasn't like a premium sushi restaurant. It was kind of like a standard. Yeah. And the uni was like maybe 2 gonads, which is like a little piece of meat on like a rice with, you know, whatever. Oh. And it was like 10 or 11 US dollars for that, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, dang, that's expensive. Maybe it's good. And I tried it and I was like, this is garbage compared to what I get out in the Channel Islands and the, So I have a story about the urchin.
Ooh,
a lot of stories. I'll tell you one. A friend of mine went to Japan, and he is like the master uni collector and fan. You know, he loves urchin. So he goes to Japan because, as you probably know, that's like a popular dish there.
Yeah.
He goes to Tokyo. He's like asking around, like, where is the best place I can get uni? So they tell him that it's an expensive restaurant, and he's like, you know what? I'm in Japan. I'm going to just whatever it costs to get the most like expensive, delicious uni, however they prepare it, you know? So they brought it out. It like, you know, pretty fresh, pretty delicious. Mm-hmm. Before he even took a bite, they said, this is the premium uni, and it comes from the Santa Barbara Channel.
No way.
No.
Yeah. It's like considered the best in the world. And he was like, okay, I just flew halfway across the world to be served something that I literally, you know, pull off of rocks every single day.
Oh, man,
wow.
He said it was all right.
Yeah. No, where I had uni for like fresh for the first time was actually in Hong Kong. And we were in this like area where it was like fishermen boats and everything. So there was one boat that just was selling like uni.
Ooh.
Yeah. So then we went there and we're like, oh yeah, can we get like a bunch? Because if you buy it, you could bring it to the restaurants that are like located there.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy was like, here, you want to play with one? We're like, oh, I don't know. And he's like, it doesn't hurt. Right. And he just threw one from the boat. We're like, right. So then we grabbed it and then I put it on my hand. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. It doesn't hurt. Like it's like flat like on the bottom and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, we had it super fresh. It's so good.
Nice. Nice.
Jeez.
Yeah. Amazing. The guy just threw it up. We're like, whoa. Like we were just all scared. We're like, what are you doing? But he's just like, whatever.
Yeah.
So many.
Yeah, there's all different species, and different species have longer spines than others. Some of them have sharper spines than others. There's like a pencil urchin that grows that lives down in Hawaii and probably other places. And it's called a pencil urchin because the native people in Hawaii, when they died, they used to take the spines and it's kind of rounded on the end. And then they would make ink and literally use the spines as a drawing utensil.
Oh, wow. That's so cool.
If you touch one of those, they're actually kind of like, they're not sharp at all. You can, you know, no risk of injury.
Jeez. Wow. Speaking of Hawaii, you worked there for a bit too, right? And
yeah.
You mentioned lilikoi too?
Lilikoi. Yeah. I had never had fresh lilikoi before until I got to Maui. And it just like, it was, I don't know if it was in season in the winter or if it's, I don't know what it was, but it was ready and it was good. And it was like so many trees, you just pick it up off the ground, that it has such a like distinct flavor. You can't describe it. You can't compare it to anything else, you know, just a very, very unique flavor.
Nice. Amazing. Yeah. So you obviously just try it all, right? Like figs.
Yeah. And lilikoi, if anybody doesn't know, is also called passion fruit. That's kind of the westernized name for it. Mm-hmm. And it's starting to show up in like yogurt flavors and stuff more. But in Maui, it's like in everything. It's like a, you know, they use that in hot sauce and pie, like everything's lilikoi. And it's all awesome. There's no bad use for it.
Amazing. Huh.
That's cool.
That sounds really cool, actually. So let's say somebody wants to travel to the Channel Islands. What are some tips, would you say? Like travel tips there? Like you said, it's kind of the one of the least traveled places.
It's the least visited national park in the every state except Alaska.
Is right. it hard to get to or something or why?
Well, you can't drive there, right? A lot of the, I think the most visited national park is the Smoky Mountains, which is kind of on the East Coast. And you kind of have to drive through the Smoky Mountains if you're going from like one state to the other sometimes, you know? So a lot of people drive through it. But you can't drive out there because it's the islands. They're islands.
Yeah.
And there's no like grocery stores or electricity mm-hmm. or roads, and no cell phone service for the most part.
Yeah.
So it's wilderness. So yeah, it takes a little extra planning, you know. It's more expensive than just driving through a national park. You have to mm-hmm. charter a plane or a boat to get you out there.
Wow.
But sounds like it's well worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. When I moved to LA, obviously, like, you know, I wanted to find all the cool like outdoor areas, and I was on the beach and I was like, is there a mountain out there in the ocean? Like, what is that? And that's where the islands, you know? And so of course I got out there and checked that out. And then I was telling people in LA about it, you know, like, yo, I finally got out there. And they're like, where? And I was like, the islands, if you look at the ocean, there's a mountain out in the ocean. That's an island. And they're like, a what? And yeah, people in LA don't know that, like, if they look out their window, that there's an island off the coast. And people know about Catalina, but that's not part of the national park. Yeah. So that was like mind blowing to me that people didn't know that. And now I'm kind of okay with it because there's not too many people out there. Yeah. And it's kind of, that's what makes it special.
Yeah.
Okay.
So how long do you stay out there at a time for?
So the maximum that we're allowed is 2 weeks. Apparently nobody stays out there for 2 weeks except for me. I get made fun of for it. But yeah, usually 5 days like the average. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So if they go out there, can they find you there if you're there? Like, will you show them around? And
yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. When I bring friends out, I'll usually grab them some fresh uni and scallops and whatever else is, you know, in season that I can grab. Wow. Sometimes there's some really good crabs.
Wow. That sounds
amazing. Yeah.
Is there like a limit to how much you could take for like,
that's a good question, Vic. Yeah. So for the urchin, there is no limit. And the reason for that is there is a overpopulation and it's a very serious problem. Urchin eat algae. And the biggest algae out there is kelp. Mm-hmm. And kelp is kind of like the staple it's like a cornerstone species that mm-hmm. everything else out there kind of revolves around. And these urchin are just eating it up faster than it can grow. Wow. And, you know, there was a balance. There were sea otters that would eat them. Mm-hmm. Primarily, that's what they would eat. There's other things that eat them, but not fast enough.
Yeah.
Wow. So I'll go down there and eat it fast enough then.
All right, Vic. we'll have like the California Department of Agriculture and like Natural Resources fly you out. And like your mission is literally to like get the urchin colonies back in check and in balance with nature.
I'll take you guys down.
Yeah, Vic's coming.
Yeah.
From Canada.
Unfortunately, it's a lot of work. It's easy to find them and mm-hmm. to grab them, but like actually cleaning them and mm-hmm. and then also finding the ones that have like the really good gonads. I don't really know exactly how it works, but there's definitely like on the same day, if you swim a quarter mile, there's urchin that have really, really delicious fresh gonads and then other ones that are like non-existent. So I think it has to do with like breeding cycles or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting. And for scallops, do you just like find them like right by the shore or like?
So yeah, scallops are, the scallops we have in California, pretty much from like Mexico all the way up to Oregon, I think, or even Washington, they go up pretty far. Mm-hmm. They're called rock scallops mm-hmm. and they're not commercially fished or commercially sold. So it's really just like enthusiasts, you know, recreational And it's a lot of work finding them. They like find little crevices in a rock. Mm-hmm. And as you know, like a scallop is a shell, has two shells, and it opens up and it like, it'll open up just big enough that it can like filter in the water to eat the particles and stuff. Uh-huh. And then like, if it opened up any more, it would hit the edges of the wall. So like you could see it in there, but then like, good luck trying to get that thing out. You know, it's like literally grown into the wall. So finding one that, you know, you can break off of the wall, like they're really in there and they actually like attach to it. So yeah, you have to like break them off and then. And there's a limit on the rock scallops. It's about 10 per day per person. Okay. Or you can only have 10 in your possession.
Yeah. That's a decent amount. It's still pretty good.
Depending on how big they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my coworkers calls some of the scallops I get potato chips. There's no size limit, but you're not really supposed to take the small ones. I don't take small ones, but he's like the master scallop collector. Uh-huh. And he has like scallops that look like dinner plates. Like, where do you even find those things? So then if anything's like any smaller than his, like world record size ones, he just makes fun of them.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. So like you spoke about like camping there and everything. Have you like encountered any like weird or scary animals there?
So the cool thing about the island that I work on, so called Santa Cruz Island, mm-hmm. and all of the islands that are part of the national park, there's not really any animal on land that's going to mess you up, other than maybe like a virus that you catch from a mouse, which is not a very dramatic way to go out.
Yeah.
So like the biggest predator on land is a fox, and it's a dwarf fox that only lives on these islands and nowhere else in the world.
Oh.
And it like, it's the size of a house cat, and they're, you know, pretty much harmless. Yeah.
Huh. And they just like chill on the island. It's not like they could swim.
I've never seen them swim through the salt water, but yeah, they don't exactly just chill on the island. They actually have like this partnership with the ravens, and they work together to like get into people's tents and into people's bags. Like the ravens can open zippers, and then the foxes just like demolish everything. So the ravens will like open the zipper of somebody's bag. The foxes will pull everything out, and then they methodically like go through it. Like the ravens like the shiny things,
yeah,
the foxes like the things that are like, you know, some kind of like sweet flavor to it.
So they tag team.
Yeah
Wow, what a duel.
Yeah, whenever people like get off the boat and are walking down, like it's kind of creepy because ravens are super intelligent. Mm-hmm. They're looking at people, looking for stupid people. Like, I'm 100% positive that's what they're doing. They're like, okay, here comes the new batch of idiot humans. Let's look for the ones that are going to put their bag down and then like go to the bathroom and, you know, not watch it. So, and then they'll follow the stupid people and then just wait. And they don't have to wait very long usually to get into their stuff.
Wow.
And then do they make like a call to the foxes? Like, caw-caw, like come.
Oh yeah. The foxes know. They're just always around too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, yeah. That's a good story. That's so interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. Okay. The more you know. Like, who knew? Yeah.
And like literally when they get off the boat, the ranger tells everybody, like they have like a list of things, like don't fall off the cliffs. And the people are like, oh, okay. And then they tell them like, don't leave your bags unattended. Like literally don't turn your back on your bags, because the ravens will open them up and then pull everything out. And they really like car keys and shiny things, you know, so they just fly away with people's car keys. Like they're literally just told that. And then 10 minutes later, they leave their bag and then the ravens are getting into it.
They're probably like, please, like, they're not smart enough to.
Yeah. I think they think they're joking. And the ranger's the ranger's like, I'm seriously not joking. Like, they really do this.
Wow.
Crazy. Okay. So when you're not on the island, you said you live in LA.
I have a storage unit in LA, but I don't spend very much time there. Yeah.
Oh, but when you're there.
I used to. Yeah.
But how's the food scene like there?
I think you know, Vic. You know the answer to that question.
Okay, but let our listeners know.
It's amazing. Yeah, absolutely amazing. Pretty much whatever you're into, you can find it. Mm-hmm. Whether it's like authentic Southern Thai food that's like really spicy and, you know, made with really fresh chilies. Mm-hmm. Like you can find absolutely like at least best in the country, some restaurant. That's one of my go-tos. You want authentic Mexican food, you're not too far from the border of Mexico. Yeah. We have a couple Mexicans that live in LA and they're really good at making Mexican food. Korean food, lots of amazing Korean food. Pretty much any kind of ethnicity. Like I didn't know, like I knew Ethiopia was a country, but I didn't know they had food, like a specific, you know, kind of food until I got to LA and I was like, okay, let's check out. And it turns out it's incredible.
Yeah.
Nice.
Was it kind of like a culture shock of like all these different types of foods then that you never had before, like growing up in Ohio?
Correct? Yeah, a shock of happiness and joy.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah.
Ooh. Okay.
Definitely. And affordable too, you know. You can go places and get really good food, but you're like, you know, you have to like invest in the meal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, totally.
Because it's so expensive sometimes, you know, to get really good stuff. In LA, you can go to really expensive restaurants and, you know, sit across the table from like some movie star or something and pay hundreds of dollars for your meal. Or you can get like the same quality food 3 miles away at some like authentic little restaurant, you know, with not as nice ambience, and you have to park on the street. There's not valet parking, but like the food is literally just as good. And I'm not the only person is kind of like saying that, like a lot of people who actually really know what they're talking about say that about LA as well.
I think my favorite was the taco trucks.
Oh yeah.
Right? Trucks, where you have to kind of like chase them around and be like, okay, this one's here. Like find it and pull over and order.
Yeah. Yeah. People chase them around. I don't know. There's so many and there's so many that are good. I don't even really get too crazy with chasing them. Like, there's one. Yeah.
Walk across the street. There's another one.
Hey, you're close there. We're not close. So I got to chase them around. You know?
Oh, you're talking about where you are or in LA?
Yeah. Well, in LA, when we go to LA, it's like, okay. We got to go to the specific one.
Yeah. Yeah. The legendary ones. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Well, you talk a little bit about Korean food. Last time we chatted, you said you had a favorite on Olympic and Vermont's. Let's say I had one day in LA and I love Korean food. Tell me some of your favorites there.
Okay, yeah, you're gonna want to go to Olympic in Vermont. It's an intersection, and within a very, very short walk, like maybe like a couple buildings from the actual intersection, you have like 4 or 5 like world-renowned, amazing Korean restaurants. There's some Korean barbecue there. There's bibimbap, which is kind of a soup. Have you heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. And a couple others, like all right there. If you only had a day, maybe you could get go with friends and like order a portion from each restaurant and then you could like try it all. That's kind of like my thing. I want to like try like as many things as possible, so
like restaurant hop.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Bang, bang. That's what we call it.
Okay. So we kind of briefly talked about it in the beginning of the podcast about your podcast coming out. So
yeah.
Tell us more about that. When is it coming out? I'm excited for it.
So it's called Teeth Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
When is this episode going to air?
Probably like sometime in May.
Okay. Yeah. Hopefully it'll be out by then.
Okay. So maybe when you get the release date, we'll put it in our description or like,
yeah, hopefully it'll be out by May. What is this month? April? Okay.
Yes,
yeah. Yeah. Hopefully I'm working. It's here's my thing. Like I want it to be really good. And I have like maybe like 20 people that are like, when is it coming out? I want it now. So I'm like, I'm okay with them being upset and impatient to like make it really good, you know?
Yeah.
And it is really good. It's just kind of like editing and getting the music right and everything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's the concept or the description is people that have survived animal attacks, you know?
Yes.
And I really like to get into the details. Usually I do the interviews in person to kind of get a sense for them. It's more of a human connection, and obviously a lot easier before COVID to do that. So I try to do them in person. So I've traveled up to Idaho, where a guy survived a grizzly bear in Montana. He lives in Idaho. So I went up there to talk with him. I've traveled up the California coast to talk to like two ladies that were inside the mouth of a humpback whale.
Yes.
In person. And I feel like people kind of maybe open up a little bit more too. Yeah. Sound, you know, I've worked as an audio engineer, so I kind of, it's easier for me to get stuff to sound good when I'm there than like over the internet. It's really frustrating for me doing the over the internet thing to get good sound quality. So yeah, in person. And then, I get the stories. I usually talk with them for like 2 or 3 hours kind of edit it down into pretty much like an audio book of like 30 to 40 minutes. Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. You know, you wrote in our notes here, you wrote a bit of a sneak peek. You have all caps sharks. So I feel like I need to call that one out. Okay. So tell us sharks.
So I'm working with I have like this guy who's kind of like a marketing genius.
Okay.
And, so I'll just him like brainstorm things. And every time I talk to him, he's like, too many shark stories. You got too many shark stories. I have like 3 shark stories. Like, I don't think, and they're all different species, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Every like separate species of a shark is like a completely different animal, in my opinion. And I can make a podcast of just people that have survived shark attacks. So, my brainstorming marketing genius guy, I've been kind of like, whatever. But yeah, I have a lot of,
I'm interested.
A lot of shark stories.
Have it for Shark Week. Have those 3 episodes for Shark Week or something.
Yeah, right? That's a really good idea, Vic.
Yeah.
Just kind of bundle them together. I'll have probably 3 more at that point. But but here's the thing though. Everybody knows about people like the famous, you know, great whites, like the most famous. They don't even do most of the attacks, you know, but people are familiar with like tiger shark attacks in Hawaii. Every year seems like someone's dying or getting messed up by a tiger shark. Bull sharks are the most aggressive ones. They're always causing problems. That was in the true story that Jaws is based off of. Those were bull sharks, or at least a bull shark, probably more than one. So yeah, we like, these are sharks that people associate with aggression towards humans, you know. But then kind of the whole podcast, I'm trying to find stories that like we haven't already heard. And they're out there. So I found a guy that was attacked by a 7-gill shark, which is this prehistoric looking shark that I can only find maybe 1 or 2 even instances of them attacking people. Like they're generally not very aggressive towards humans. So it's kind of a developing thing. Like they're becoming more aggressive towards humans because they associate spearfishers with fish. And they know that if they go and take out the spearfisher, then they can steal their fish. So this is kind of like a developing thing that's pretty new that maybe isn't really getting too much attention. So I found a guy was attacked by one of them, and maybe like a world record size 7-gill shark too. Like one of the biggest on record for sure. And then I'm trying to find a guy I already found him. I'm talking to a guy who was attacked by Humboldt squid.
I was just gonna ask you about that. Like, what is that?
Yeah, it's you might not want to know because then you might have trouble like sleeping.
Oh no. Okay. But I'll Google it in the morning, not nighttime right now.
They're called red devils, and they live, I think they live off of Humboldt, California. That's where they got their name. But they live kind of all over. There's a huge concentration of them down in Baja, Mexico, and they hunt in packs. And then like, as they're hunting, they sometimes just attack each other and eat each other. They're just absolutely savage. People fish for them because they're squid, so they taste good. But sometimes there's like legends. It's not really confirmed, but there's stories of fishermen reaching down to pull the Humboldt squid up into the boat. And then the Humboldt squid grabs the fisherman's arm and pulls him into the ocean and eats him. And they're big enough to do that. So, and like all of their suction cups. Inside their suctions, whatever those are called. I'm supposed to be the one who knows this stuff. They have little teeth. right? Yeah. So if they grab onto you and they're suction, they can literally rip your skin off as they're holding onto your arm or whatever. Yeah.
How big do they get in order, like,
about six? Huge. Individually, they get about 6 or 7 feet, but they're really strong and they travel in these massive groups. So they're like, yeah, way scarier than piranha.
Wow. And you found someone that survived from being attacked by one.
Yeah. Yeah. He had like custom, he put on like, he had like custom, pretty much like stormtrooper gear for diving. Because he knew that they were there around. Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah. And it's not like people, I've never heard of, like, I knew that they existed and that they could be dangerous, but I'd never like heard anybody actually like tell a story about them, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to find stories for the podcast that might not be like the standard, like, yeah, a shark bit my arm off, or a grizzly bear chewed my skull, you know, like those ones are good stories, but we've all heard those stories.
Yeah.
Even the one you said with was it Liz and Julie with the kayakers,
the humpback whale. Yeah.
That was probably the most recent
properly, right? Yeah. You said the media didn't report that.
Yeah.
Well,
that was in November. Right. It's weird. Cause I've already talked to y'all and then I forgot what we talked about.
It's so interesting.
So these two women were, kayaking off of Avila Beach in California, like Southern Central California. And, there are humpback whales feeding. They feed, they get real fat, and then they go down to Mexico where there's less food for them, but if the water's warmer, and then they breed down there. Mm-hmm. And, but that might not be the reason why they go down there. Yeah. That's another story. Anyways, we don't know that much about whales and eels and sharks and a lot of things. Like, we don't really know even basic stuff about them. So anyways, humpback whales are feeding. A humpback whale came up underneath their kayak because there was a huge school of fish, swallowed all the fish, and then they kind of happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and the whale comes up and swallows them. And there's like four videos, right? Like four GoPro or cell phone footage videos of people out in the water on a Monday in November. Yeah. Like, this is the society that we live in. Mm-hmm. Everyone's always rolling. I mean, obviously there's whales feeding. That's kind of cool. Like, that's an excuse, but there's four video footage angles of this happening. And like most of them, it looks like the whale comes up, knocks them out of their kayak, you know, and then the whale goes under the water and then you don't see them for a while. And then they pop up. But what happened was the whale swallowed them or had the two women in its mouth and then closed its mouth on them and went under the water. So the one woman, she knew because she bounced off of the jaw on the way into the mouth. Ugh. And then the other woman, she didn't even know where they were. She didn't even know that they were in the mouth. And then, the media like interviewed them and like just decided not to put in the part that they were inside of a whale. They said like two women were knocked out of a kayak, and it's like, okay. And then like, they just wanted like a quick, you know, sound bite and then move on to the next story. And they completely missed like the actual story. Like, these are probably the only two human beings that were ever like full inside the mouth, inside the body of a whale that closed its mouth on them, you know?
Yeah.
And they showed you video, right?
Yeah. The one woman had like a cell phone around her neck in a waterproof case. And when you watch it, it just like makes you kind of want to throw up because just everything is moving around really fast. But they when you slow it down, you can see the baleen, which is what the bigger whales have instead of teeth, and then that's how they filter out the water once they have the fish inside. You can see the baleen from the inside of the whale's mouth, like on her little, you know, video phone camera, whatever.
Crazy.
Yeah, she was pretty traumatized even a month afterwards when I talked to her.
Yeah.
I wonder if she's gonna go like
kayaking
to this
again.
Kayaking again after that.
She said she's not planning on it. But her friend was like, you know, fine. She was like, it was fun adventure. I'm, you know, back out on the ocean.
That was just in a whale's mouth, no problem.
Yeah.
Well, when that episode comes out for you, let us know. And I'm sure our listeners, your listeners, would love to see the full interview and and however you structure that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah. We're all connected on social media and everything.
Exactly. Totally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we could probably go on and on listening to your stories, but we don't want you to tell us any more stories. We want our listeners to go to your podcast and to listen. So to close it off, I'm going to ask you one more question, Jeremy.
Yeah.
So your podcast is about people surviving like animal attacks and everything.
Yeah.
What was your, like, did you survive any animal attacks?
Yeah, I did. Yep.
What was the worst one?
The worst one was a stingray. I got a really bad stingray sting. To set the stage, in California, there's round stingrays. I'm not describing what the stingray shape is, like that's a species. And they're pretty small. They don't get very big. Maybe like 2 or 3 feet wide, which is not that big for a stingray. And people get stung by them every single day. Multiple times on one beach in California in one day, there was like over 100 people that got stung by stingrays that like went to the lifeguards for help. And then there was probably that many that were just like, oh, dang it. And then walked to their cars and had a beer. So it's pretty common that people get stung by stingrays. Mm-hmm. But there's a wide range of how much of the venom gets in your body when you get stung. Like I've seen people get stung and they didn't even realize it. They come out of the water and their ankle's bleeding. And I'm like, hey, I think you got stung by a stingray. And they're like, no. And then I point it out and they're like, oh, maybe. Like they didn't even feel it. And then there's other people that get stung and they're like screaming like they're going to die. Like they're in so much pain, you know? And I thought it was like, oh, some people have, you know, can manage fear better than others. Mm-hmm. But after being stung twice, the first time the barb got stuck in my ankle, it hit the bone and just stopped. So it didn't go in very far. And it felt like a hornet sting. You know, if you've ever been stung by a hornet, like you feel it and it's painful, but you don't think that you're going to die. And then another time, a couple months later, I got stung where the barb went up inside the bottom of my foot.
Oh,
man. It's like really fleshy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It got in real nice and deep, and they have a sheath. Their barb has a sheath, like a venom sheath in their body. And then as the barb comes through the venom sheath, it brings the venom with it, right? So if it recently stung something, it like used some of that venom. And then if it stings something again, it has less, right? Yeah. Well, this one was like waiting and saving up for me.
Wow.
Like,
no.
So like right away from the onset, like I knew I got stung by a stingray because I had felt it before. And I knew it was like way, 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 way more intense. So it was so bad that like time slowed down.
No way.
Like I thought that I was stung about 45 minutes ago. And then the lifeguard was like, yeah, we picked you up 7 minutes ago. Like this was not that, like, I was explaining it to him. Like when it happened, he was like, well, that's impossible. Cause we like came out of the ocean 7 minutes ago. And I was like, oh man, time slowed down so I can suffer longer.
Yeah. Wow. So then do they give you like a vaccine? Like what do they give you? Like drugs to kind of get the venom out?
I need to like research this more. I've put in some research. The kind of venom that puts in your body, it doesn't attack your nervous system. Apparently it like attacks your muscle somehow. Oh. So it's like a different kind of pain. And the lifeguard told me that they had, one of the really good ones, morphine, right? Mm-hmm. So he's like, we have morphine, but it's not going to help. And I was like, well, I would like to try it and then report back to you.
I'll let you know.
Yeah. He was like, no, that's not how it works. Like for stingrays, it's pain. Like he had been stung too. Anybody who works in the water all the time, especially like in Southern California in the summertime, they're just everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, he had been stung too. He's like, yeah, no, I know it's painful. And like, you just kind of got to power through. If you put your foot or your, you know, usually it's on your foot that gets stung, you know, if you put it in hot water, it helps neutralize the toxin.
Yeah.
Something about the hot water, it makes the proteins like less powerful or something. So yeah, that helped first time. First time I put my ankle in a bucket of hot water once I got to the hospital, they had to take out the bar. They had to like surgically remove it. So it was like a whole ordeal the first time, but it didn't hurt very bad, you know?
Yeah.
And I got a cool souvenir from it. So the first time, you know, I got to the hospital, put my foot in the hot water, like 90% of the pain just went away instantly, you know? Oh, it was good. Like right away. So the second time when that got really bad, I put my foot in the hot water and it was like no difference. It still hurt, you know?
Yeah.
And the lifeguard was like, well, since it's so deep up inside your foot, like it's going to take a while for that hot water to like warm up your whole foot. And it's such like a balancing act. Like you want the water as hot as possible so that it can, you can get rid of the pain. But then if you make it too hot, you can actually burn yourself and cause more problems.
Yeah.
And when you're in that much pain, you like don't really care. So if I was camping or something and like heating up water on a stove or a, you know, campfire, I like almost 100% would have like burned all my skin off just trying to make the pain go away, you know?
Yeah.
But fortunately there was like professionals not giving me hotter water than was healthy for me. I thought that the hot water wasn't working at all. And then like, I took my foot out of the hot water and realized, oh, it was helping, but the pain was also intensifying while I was sitting there. It was like 6 hours of just like pretty much uncontrollable pain or like unbearable pain. Like, like, shouldn't my body be blacking out from the pain right now? Like, what is wrong with you, body? Like, why are you just staying conscious? You know?
Deal with this pain.
Yeah. I was like asking the lifeguard, like, can you put me under? And they're like, no.
Like, come on, please.
Make an exception.
You like position me like away from the boardwalk. So like people walking by, like enjoying their beautiful day on the beach, like wouldn't see this guy, like grown man with a beard with like boogers all in the beard, crying and like bloodshot eyes, like rocking back and forth, like just complete, you know, out of control. And then like, I couldn't see when they went by. So like every like 30 seconds, I'd be like, I need hotter water. They're like, we just gave you. I'm like, I need more hotter water. Like the most high maintenance patient ever. So I like turned around and facing the boardwalk. So everybody's like walking by and like, look at me and be like, oh man, don't make eye contact. He's crazy.
crazy guy alert.
Oh wow, that's crazy though. But then everyone still goes into the water. Like they're just like, whatever, it's stingrays.
Yeah, if you shuffle your feet, I should have started off with this. So when you're in the water, you don't want to lift your feet up off the bottom of the ocean, right? You want to drag your feet along the bottom of the ocean. Mm. That way, if there's a stingray under you, if you bump the side of it, it's just going to swim off. It's not going to sting you. It's only going to sting you if you step on it and pin it between your body and the bottom of the ocean. Gotcha. It's going to think that you're trying to catch it, and then it's going to sting in defense. Unless that stingray is a dickhead, then it'll just sting you for no reason, which is what the second one did. Like I didn't step on it. I just literally swam by it. Didn't even see it. And then it stung me through the bottom of my foot.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a good tip for our listeners.
Shuffle
your feet.
You definitely want to shuffle your feet, especially in the summertime when the water is really warm. They come in the real shallow water to breed.
Okay.
Huh? Well, I'm so excited for your podcast, Jeremy. Like very, very excited.
Cool.
Yeah. So, but thanks for coming on and telling your story with us. And yeah, like we will let our listeners know and let everyone know when your podcast comes out.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You can find it at theteethpod.com. Right now there is, you can put your email address in there and get on the mailing list. Mm. That's the best way to stay updated. And then also we're on social media, Teeth Podcast, Instagram, Facebook, whatever the other ones are. I don't even know.
Don't worry. We'll put it all in the description box for you. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, thanks for coming on so much. Like this was so fun.
Yeah. I had questions for you. I feel like I should come back on and interview you guys, 'cause I have questions for you guys too. I'm like listening through your episodes. I am having so much fun. You guys are really good at what you do.
Nice. Oh, thanks.
Thank you. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's plan for an interview the other way.
Yeah.
We'd
love to chat with you some more. It's awesome.
Okay, great. That sounds good.
Yeah. Whenever you're ready, let us know. We'll make it happen.
Mostly, I just want to know what it's like to be the mascot from Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh, damn.
Eddie, you can answer that one.
All right. Okay, let's do an episode on that.
All right. Give the listeners a sneak preview of that. Let's do it.
All right, let's do one on that. Definitely.
Right on.
All right.
Okay, cool, Jeremy.
Thank you so much, Eddie and Vic.
Thank you again. Yeah, we'll talk soon. Take care, man.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
Thank you.